Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
How do you say your last name? What did you say, Stargus?
Strage.
Strage?
Strage.
Strage?
Yeah, Strage.
Den här podcasten presenteras av Sonos.
Well, hello there. This is Richard Ramon. I'm in Sweden. I'm at Fredrik Strage's house. I hope I said that correct. And we've been walking around, got here this morning, around 10:30, a beautiful day here in a beautiful city. Played a show last night, which was excellent there at the Southside Pub. And it was the first time I met Fredrik. And now I'm just looking around his rooms and beautiful place with high ceilings and all kinds of memorabilia here. I mean, from Tupac to the Misfits dolls to Cramps. I'm seeing a lot of records I like here. Really interesting. I'm looking forward to this, talking to him. I've heard a lot about him from my friend Bjorn. And hopefully let's get this rolling and let's see where it takes us today.
Well, very welcome here. First of all, you know, happy 60th birthday.
Oh, thank you.
What did you do? That was last Friday.
It was last Friday. It was really interesting because they brought out a cake, and it was actually two nights, the night before and the night of. And I'll always remember how they stopped the show and sang happy birthday to me in Swedish, which I've never heard before. It's interesting because they don't really use your name when they sing happy birthday, you know. But it was really cool to see all the people singing that song to me.
So how does it feel to be 60? Are you?
I don't know. You know, that's just ageism. I think, you know, you are what you feel. You know, I still feel okay. I think, you know, keeping a young mind is what, you know, age is all about. You know, I know 60-year-olds who, you know, they don't keep that young spirit. I try to keep that spirit, and I think that'll help me live longer and be happier. And you just can't, you know, you can't eat like the stuff you ate when you were 20 years old. You have to be more cautious of that.
Like what, for instance?
Well, you know, can't just chomp down like hamburgers and fries every day and all that kind of stuff. You have to eat a little more healthier.
You mean the typical Ramones food?
Yeah, or, you know, pizza every night. You know, I think you just have to stay on top of it. And And, you know, I think it'll lead to a better life. So things are going really well right now.
I actually thought about age last night at the concert, which was excellent, by the way.
But
one of your fans showed up in one of those four-wheel walkers that senior citizens use.
Right.
While you were singing, the kids are losing their minds, the Blitzkrieg bop. And I just thought to myself, well, the kids aren't just losing their minds. They're losing their hair. They're losing, you know, their eyesight. Mm-hmm. They're losing their ability to walk.
Right.
But they're still rocking. And that's what counts.
Yeah. I mean, we played Rebellion Festival in England in Blackpool last week or 2 weeks ago. And that's just like all the old punk rockers there, you know. They have gray hair now, they have a cane, but they still believe in the punk rock spirit, which to me is really all about, you know, being true to yourself, being a good person, not being a phony, you know, being a real guy. I think that's what really punk stands for, you know.
also punk is comparatively is a young subculture. You know, if you look at, you know, the Teddies in England, for instance,
right?
You know, they're still around, or the Mods, mm-hmm. they're still around,
yeah,
and they're pushing 70,
right? Yeah, it's really. I thought when I was 35, I was too old, but I mean, it's good to see that, you know. It doesn't really matter how much you look like. I remember, you know, in the 80s when the bands came out, the hair metal bands, you had to have a look and everything. It doesn't really matter today. It's all about the music and you know, being real. You got to be real. People can call you out if you're not real and you're up there like just goofing around, you know?
Blue jean baby, L.A. lady, seamstress for the band.
All right, Frederick, I brought a couple songs.
Excellent.
You know, you asked me to bring something in, and these were came off the top of my head. You know, I didn't like sit around and think because five songs, come on, I could bring in here 100 songs, and I still wouldn't have all my favorite songs.
Ballerina, you must have seen her dancing in the sand.
You know, I remember one of my first concerts was Elton John, and way back in the 70s. I don't think he had this song out yet, but I really enjoy this Tiny Dancer. I think it, you know, it's just something about it that really moves me, so.
Jesus freaks out in the street.
That's a beautiful track. I listened to that song just last week because I'm very much into the new Lana Del Rey album where she does a duet with Sean Lennon.
Oh,
and
okay.
She quotes Tiny Dancer.
Wow.
She sings, "You can be my tiny dancer, honey."
Right.
He makes a stand.
I went to the Ramones Museum in Berlin.
Oh, okay. A
very nice place, lots of memorabilia, lots mm-hmm. of old records and everything. And they gave you this, like a leaflet, which with the basic information that you need to know about the Ramones, like all the albums. And then at the end of it, they write about what happened to the members after the band broke up in 96. And it says, on April 15th, 2001, Joey Ramone died of cancer. He was 49.
Mm-hmm.
Didi Ramone died of a heroin overdose on June 4th, 2002. He was 50. Johnny Ramone was diagnosed with cancer around 2001 and died on September 15th in 2004. He was 55.
Right.
Tommy Ramone still plays with his band Uncle Monk. Well, he's passed away since then. Marky Ramone still plays with a bunch of mediocre punk groups.
Nice.
CJ Ramone is a full-time dad and has a band called Bad Chopper.
Right.
Richie Ramone is a golfer.
When was that? Yeah, that's old.
I think it's from 2009 or 2010.
You know.
So you're...
I'm into golf, but you know, this was all before any of this stuff ever started, you know. I mean, when I quit the band, there was a lot of bad blood and, you know, so... They said a lot of weird things about me, but, you know, I just move forward, you know. I don't look backwards.
So they meant golfer as an insult?
Huh? It's not an insult, but I don't, you know.
Give me a lot of rock stars play golf, like Alice Cooper and...
Yeah, Alice Cooper, you know. He played with Glenn Campbell a lot, you know. Who was his friends there. Well, I don't know, but I mean, there could be another line about me in there besides I'm a golfer. I've done many things, but that must have been before because I really got back on the circuit around 2010. So I'm surprised they still have that thing out there. They should make a new one is what I'm saying because CJ's doing things, you know, he's playing, you know, and things have changed since that. But that's pretty funny, man.
So you're a good golfer?
Yeah, I was down to like a 3 handicap, you know, but I've been traveling a little, so... That's why I live in California, because I don't like the snow, so I could play golf. But golf is the extreme opposite of of rock and roll. It's just you're outside in the air and you smoke Cuban cigars and, you know, you could do a lot of business on the golf course too. So it's a lot of fun for me.
Watching girls pass by. It ain't the latest thing. I'm just staying.
No, let's listen to the Rolling Stones, Waiting on a Friend. This song, you know, I love the video where Keith, you know, sitting on, you know, the stoop in the East Village. You know, I think it talks about, you know, he's waiting on his dealer to come by to give him the drugs. I think that's what the song's about. Well, that's what it means to me, which is really important because things can mean different things to other people. It doesn't have to be, you know, mean only one thing. So let's listen to this one.
You know, the beat is quite interesting here. It sounds almost Caribbean or, you know, Calypso-like.
Right.
It's not a typical bluesy Rolling Stones beat.
Well, a little bit, but yeah. Yeah, you're right. It has a little extra percussion in it than
normal. It's almost like summer-like in a way.
Right, right. It is.
Like
it was shot in the summer, yeah. It has that feeling. It's very good.
I can't help thinking when I read about what happened to the original Ramones members that it's kind of weird that three of four original members died from cancer. You know, that's a lot. You know, It's very sad, but also it kind of feels almost as if
all
they were...
All four, not three. Four of
four. All four of them. And what happened to Arturo Vega?
And then he went. Arturo had some kind of blood disease or something like that. I'm not sure the exact story on that, but it's just incredible to
and
see
he was
all
their graphic
five of them.
Designer. Yeah, all
Arturo was with them from pretty much the beginning, you know. He was like the fifth Ramon or whatever you want to call it. But, yeah, he did the whole graphic design. He was on tour with us. He did all the lighting. You know, the Ramones would bring all their own lights in, all their own sound in. You know, we used to travel with like nine people, you know, back in the day. Because you got to remember the clubs back then in the 80s didn't have good sound systems. You would have to bring your own, so...
But Arturo died from cancer as well, or some kind
of... I think so, I'm not sure. Yeah. I'm not exactly
but
sure.
You know, it makes you wonder if they were exposed to any kind of...
Well, I think...
Or if it's just bad luck or smoking or...
Well, I know a lot of things with CBGBs. I know Vera Ramone has got some kind of cancer. I think there's something in that club that really affected a lot of people. I think there was something in the old CBGBs that... put a lot of people out. Maybe they
like
caught something
in the building. Like
yeah, something in the building. I mean, the bathroom there was the filthiest thing you could ever go into. I'm sure you read about that. It was horrific, but there may have been something in the building. Who knows? It may have been, you know, that stuff they put in the ceilings and, you know, I don't know. But another one of my favorites, naturally, the Talking Heads, David Byrne, incredible song. Psycho Killer, I mean, I think this was the all-time song from that time period that was just so inspirational, walking around the East Village listening to this.
I can't seem to face up to the facts. I'm tense and nervous and I can't relax. I can't sleep cause my bed's on fire. Don't touch me, I'm a real live wire. Psycho Killer.
I read about how the Ramones went on tour with Talking Heads back in the 70s, and they, you know, they had a big mutual respect, but they were so different that, you know, when they came to Europe, the Talking Heads were quite intellectual. They would go to, you know, art museums, and they
right.
spoke French and everything. And they, you know, when they went to Belgium, the Talking Heads said, "Oh, that's nice, Belgian food. Let's try waffles."
Uh-huh.
And the Ramones were like, "Oh, where's Burger King?"
Right.
And you know, there's a story about how Johnny Ramone got upset because the Talking Heads made the tour bus stop at Stonehenge. And,
oh, okay.
And Johnny Ramone was like, well, what's the point? That's a bunch of old rocks.
Right.
Who cares?
Yeah, he wasn't much for tourism. Johnny Ramone loved the United States, and that was about it. But, you know, the funny thing is, you see the old poster from CBGB's, the Ramones headline, Talking Heads opening up, Blondie opening up, Tom Petty opening up for the Ramones. All those bands, you know, just passed them by and became huge, huge bands. You know, the list is endless. It's crazy.
What made you return to music in 2013 with Entitled, your first solo album?
Well, the way that came about was, you know, I took a long break. After I left the Ramones, I played in some bands around L.A., and I was just like, I'm done. And it was like 10 years where I just went on hiatus. And then Mickey Lee, Joey's brother, called me up and said, why don't you come and play the Joey Ramone birthday bash? Every year we have a Joey Ramone birthday bash on May 19th. And it's been going on for 20 years now since his passing. And I said, you know what? Okay, I'll do that. So I think that was 2006. And then I went the next year. And then I started realizing what was missing from my life. You know, it was like music was missing. Being able to write music, being able to express myself, being able to be intimate with fans at shows. So I went and did a few more bashes. And then people said, well, you should start writing again. Then I started writing. Then they said, oh, why don't you make your own record? And I was like, I don't know how to make a record. So the process went further, and then I ended up with Entitled, and now I have Cellophane out, and here I am now at 60 touring. It's pretty crazy how it all worked out that way. You know,
where did you get that title, Cellophane?
I just made it up because I like the word, and that's what the song is about. Cellophane's like a medium tempo song. It's about... every night I go to the show, right? And, you know, when you're on tour, night after night after night, you feel wrapped up. Like, you feel like, I don't know, it can start to get very tiring and stuff like that. But when I pull up to the nightclub and people start yelling my name, I feel like I break out of that. And, you know, so I break out of the cellophane and give them the show. That's kind of what the basis of the song is about. You know, they lift me up, you know?
Yeah, I could see that last night.
Yeah. Without the audience, I'm nothing but an old guy in a microphone and a drum kit. But the fans and the audience is what really makes this particular kind of show come alive.
I was surprised by how rough your solo albums are. You know, they actually remind you more of the Stooges than the Ramones in some ways, right. Or Black Flag even.
Right. I don't know. I still like writing. You know, well, half of that is probably my voice because I have a very growly voice. You know, I'm not like the singer or whatever like that. You know, I sing a little lower. But I don't know. I think simple is the way to go. I think I've been influenced a lot. You know, I was like 26 when I got in the Ramones and they gave me the direction of what I wanted to do. You know, like play aggressive, loud music and fast music and so I think that's where some of that came from, you know, because I was all over the place as a kid of different kinds of music, what I listened to and what I played.
There's a world where I can go and tell my secrets to. In my room
In My Room by the Beach Boys. I don't know, probably not too many people have ever heard this song, but I like it. I mean, it gets really into Brian, you know, into his headspace of how, you know, difficult it was to live in his brain, you know, which sometimes I feel I run into. I could really relate to that, where he just stays in his room and is thinking, and, you know, it's hard for him to even get outside, but this is a special, special song, you know, one of my favorites from them.
Lie awake and pray.
it celebrates the peace that you find in your teenage bedroom, but at the same time, it's kind of sad because you know how Brian Wilson would withdraw from the world and from his father who bullied him, and just stay in his room and listen to music and not come out. And then, you know, he locked himself in the studio for a decade.
So much going through his brain all the time, and, you know, like Michael Jackson, you know, these guys, they can't even sleep, you know, and I feel I have the same problem. You know, I go on tour, I sleep 4 or 5 hours, but as soon as I wake up, it's hard to go back to sleep because thoughts just start flooding my head, you know. And, you know, like I have Ronnie, he's 28 years old, Ben, those guys could sleep 12 hours with a train whistle next to their ear and doesn't even bother them, you know. But I find that it's very difficult for me, so I have to catch another nap like late in the afternoon when I get to the hotel, because 4 or 5 hours and I'm done. As soon as I wake up, it's very difficult for me to go back to sleep.
What kind of thoughts fill your head at five o'clock in the morning?
A lot of musical thoughts and drum beats and, you know, just what do I have to do today? What happened tomorrow? How was the show? My family, you know, whatever's affecting me right now. You know, my parents are still alive, but my dad's pretty sick right now. So just my whole life has been like, you know, you start thinking. I just can't roll over and go, just, you know, grab a pillow and go back to sleep. It's always been difficult for me. So, like last night, I went to bed at, like, you know, 1:32. I was already having coffee at 7. I'm the earliest rock and roller in town, you know. Plus, I love my mornings. I know a lot of guys love their nighttime, but I love my mornings.
So you're from New Jersey?
New Jersey, Passaic, New Jersey.
And you worked as a security guard before you got involved in music? Or what kind of stuff did you...
Security guard, that's when I moved to the East Village in New York City. I worked at a clothing store, and I was like, you know, the guy who would watch people stealing clothes. It was a little boutique shop. The owners were friends of mine, and that was kind of a fun job, just standing around and, you know, watching. They sold vintage clothing. And I remember, I'll tell you a quick story about this. So there I was, you know, you didn't wear a uniform or nothing. You were just hanging. And someone said, where's the leather jackets? There were like 9 leather jackets missing from the shelf. And it was wintertime. And it was right by the park there. I went, oh, my God. So I went running out and eventually saw this guy with a trash can, you know, like the plastic bag, walking through the park like this. And I approached him, and those were the jackets. I got the jackets back, you know. So I actually caught this guy and got him back and this whole deal. So, but that was a fun time, you know. The East Village, growing up there, I don't think I'd ever want to grow up anywhere else. You know, moving to the East Village at 19, 20 years old was incredible for me. Coming from New Jersey, I was only 10 miles away from there, so.
So what did your parents do back in Jersey?
My father was... he had his own landscape gardening business. He had about 15 employees, about 8 trucks, and that's what he did all his life. And that's what I would work for him in the summer and on weekends, so I never had to work at Burger King as a kid, you know. I always had money, and I would play in wedding bands with my older brother, so I never had to do that Burger King or McDonald's job. So he, you know, I grew up in, you know, a middle-class family, you know, and wasn't this misfit from the street that got into this business. I kind of came from, you know, middle class, so different than some other rock stars, you know.
And compared to the other Ramones, did you feel that you had a more wholesome background than them? Or?
Well, you know, I wasn't, I don't know if it was wholesome, but I was just a kid from New Jersey, you know, who got thrown into these icons, which was, you know, really bizarre. I got that, you know, from a blind audition hanging out. And I told Matt or Larry, you know, they were one of the roadies. They were going because the Ramones were auditioning drummers. And I said, put my name in the hat. And sooner or later, you know, Monty called me, and that's how I got the job. So it really wasn't, I didn't know them before or hang out with them before. It was my first national act, so it was a big deal at 26 years old to make that happen, or 25, I forget when I was.
But you once saw them in your high school, right?
Yes, I saw them in Dover, New Jersey the first time. And I was like, wow, you know, this is, you know, you got to remember there was disco going out, and, you know, not going out, but disco was happening. And it really, you know, kind of was inspirational to see something brand new. You don't really see that today anymore. There's nothing really brand new in music, you know, so, and that's why the Ramones are around still to this day and forever and ever, because they were groundbreakers.
So what were your first impressions in high school seeing?
Well, I was like, I'm not sure, but, you know, like anybody else, the first time you saw that, you were like, you know, in shock and awe, really, because you'd never seen anything like that before. We were listening to Yes and arena rock, you know, and stuff like that. You know, everything was technical and, you know, you had to be like the musician to be in one of those bands. But, you know, I tell the story all the time, no matter what that feeling was the first time I saw it, you know, I didn't have Ramones posters on my wall before I saw that or any of that. But when I got into that band, I became the biggest fan in the world, because that's when you realize what it's real about, when you just get to be brothers with those people, you know?
Cheetah with a hat full of napalm. I'm a runaway son of the nuclear A-bomb.
Well, this one, the Stooges, Raw Power. I mean, I wanted to give everybody out there something that's so cool. I mean, this changed the face for Iggy and everything. This was the song that launched his career.
That's the best opening line of any song ever. I'm a street-walking cheetah with a heart full of napalm. That's great, but what does it mean?
You know, well, it means what you want it to mean, you know. It means that he's tough and fired up, you know. It means a lot of things. The recording of that record is very, very raw. It's almost like the first Ramones record, you know. Like, by today's standards, you couldn't put a record out like that. It just doesn't, you know, it doesn't have that full sound, you know what I'm saying? Like, the Ramones' first album is very, very different, you know, so I don't know. He's just one of the geniuses of our time. The one who's searching to destroy. And honey, I'm the world's forgotten boy. The one who's searching only to destroy.
So what was the mood like in the band when you joined it? Because there had been a lot of fighting between... Mark Ramone, their previous drummer, was kicked out for drinking too much.
Right.
And I guess, you know, you have to drink a lot to get kicked out of the Ramones for drinking too much.
I think so.
I read in Mickey Lee's book, Joey Ramone's brother's book,
right,
where he says that Marky drank so much that he once saw a dinosaur in his parents' backyard.
Wow. Yeah, well, that's called the heebie-jeebies. I don't know much about Marky at all. I really never even... I met him once, that's all. We don't talk or anything like that. But the mood at that time was, you know, here I come. You know, I was a few years older, younger than those guys. And I was the new blood. I was the new energy. Joey took me right under his wing. You know, for 4 years and 10 months, we hung out every night. Never missed a day together. I mean, it was incredible. And, you know... So I didn't really see all this bickering and stuff. I think that more of that got worse later after 87. I think it became more strained. But, you know, being the new guy, I think everybody's on their best behavior type of thing, you know. So I didn't, you know, all this stuff about, well, you know, Johnny would ask Monty and then Joey would go to Monty.
They wouldn't talk to each other directly, no.
I didn't really see that kind of stuff at all. So, you know, I think some stuff's a little blown out of proportion, but maybe it worsened as the 90s approached. I don't know.
How about the biggest conflict was probably between Johnny and Joey, because Johnny sort of stole Joey's girlfriend and married her.
Yeah, well, that's what I was just trying to explain now, but I didn't see much of that, you know. I mean, it was always me and Joey hanging out all the time, and Dee Dee would come around. But John was a very private man. You never saw him, only at the show. You never saw him. He always got a hotel room on a different floor. So he had his own little thing about him, you know. So you really only saw him at rehearsal or at a gig, and we never really went out and hung out together, you know, like going to clubs and nothing like that.
Mickey Lee, Joey's brother, writes in his book about seeing you with the band for the first time, and he writes that the fire was back in a big way, and Richie was providing a lot of the fuel. What do you think that you brought to the band?
Well, you know, number one, whenever you change a drummer in a band, you're going to change the sound of the band, for better or worse. There's no way. The drummer is, you know, the heartbeat of the band. You know, if you got rid of Charlie Watts and the Rolling Stones, it would never sound like the Rolling Stones anymore. It just won't. It'll change, you know. So, you know, just what he said, I brought fire. I brought more speed. I brought more, like a locomotion quality rather than that original laid-back punk sound that was happening. I just bought, like, you know, like Dave Stewart from the Eurythmics called me, like, the human drum machine. You know, I could just play like a dance beat, because that's what I was into in 79, 80, when that stuff was coming out, all that new stuff, Gang of Four, all that stuff, where all the drums were like metered and like heavy, you know. So that's what I think I bought that. I bought new blood, and I sang live, you know, so it was like, it kind of lifted up. And remember, speedcore and hardcore were coming out that time, so our shows naturally got faster, because that's what the kids liked.
I see trees of green, red roses too, I see them blue.
Well, Richie, I'd like to play a few songs too on my Sono speaker. This is a song from Joey Ramone's solo album that came out in 2002, 1 year after he died. Such a beautiful cover of the Louis Armstrong song.
Yeah.
But there is something very, you know, powerful and sad about hearing someone who, you know, has done hundreds of songs.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
It's about violence and sniffing glue.
Right.
Just singing about how beautiful the world is.
Right. And that voice, Joey's voice. Totally emotional song.
You spent a lot of time with him. You know, he had problems with OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Yeah.
Did that manifest itself a lot? Or was he...
Oh, it was there all the time, you know, like, you know, I mean, wherever we'd go, like just across the street, he'd put his foot back and forth for like a minute. Or I'd be walking down the East Village, talking, and then I'd look and he wasn't there anymore. I'd turn around, he's way back at the corner, still trying to cross. But we had a joke about it. He'd look at me and we'd laugh about it. He'd say, oh, I'll be there, I'll be there, right there, Richie. And I'd walk back and he'd come and cross. We didn't like talk about it and say what's the matter or anything, you know. It was just like, it was comical to us. That was just him, and that's what he did. And I think it got worse and worse. There were times where, you know, He'd wake up after a show and Monty would have to take him back to the club just to go in it before we could leave the town. So I think it worsened over time, but, you know, it was just part of who he is.
It was nice of you too to dedicate the whole song to him on their last album. What's it called? The Miracle of Joey Ramone?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Where they sing about how much he meant for them. But, you know, it kind of makes you wonder, why couldn't they bring the Ramones on tour with them back in 87 or 88 when U2 was the biggest rock band in the entire world?
Because they don't, nobody thinks that way, you know, nobody really thinks that way. It's all after the fact. You know, the Ramones became huge after they all passed. You know, they sell more records now than they did the whole career, you know, since they all passed.
And they must sell a lot of merchandise. You know,
Still to this day, they still sell merchandise and they're a brand, let's face it. They're a brand, like a shopping brand.
It's quite unusual for new members to get to write songs in a band.
Totally.
You know, especially, you know, if they're drummers, actually. Right. You know the old drummer joke. What was the last thing the drummer said before he was kicked out of the band? Huh. Hey, guys, I wrote some songs.
Oh, I never heard that. That's a good one.
But you must have, you know...
No,
left a pretty big impression on them. For you know,
no, the huge thing was Joey. Joey, indeed, Joey said he saw the talent. Joey was a very keen, clever guy. He saw my talent. He said, "Richie, I need you to write more. I want you to sing more with me." You know, he was secure in his sneakers and his rose-colored glasses. Very secure. He wasn't like a lead singer that said, "Oh, you're the drummer. Stay in the background, you know, and keep quiet and just drum." Joey, you know, pushed me to the forefront. You know. So that's what's cool about it.
Probably the heaviest song you wrote for the Ramones is "I'm Not Jesus,"
right?
Which you played last night,
right?
Do sometimes you know people treat you like a Christ-like figure, or
song? That was just more about you know my Catholic upbringing, you know, as a kid. But no, they don't treat you like that, you know. I mean, listen. I don't know what they do, you know. I'm just like a regular guy like you, you know, and like everybody else in the world. Just I have a different job, you know, and, you know, that's how I feel about it, you know. And I don't walk around on a pedestal or any of that stuff. It's just a different job, and I want to deliver and make sure everyone has a good time every night we play.
Here's a song by a Swedish rock band called the Backyard Babies.
Okay.
It's a song called Friends, where they bring in a lot of guest vocalists. So okay. They have Danko Jones and Mike Monroe from the Hanoi Rocks,
right.
And Joey Ramone. This is one of the last things that he recorded. And he, in the lyrics he sings, "I got a friend, his name is Ben. He's gone to hell, but they won't let him in."
Oh, okay.
And when that song came out, there was a critic, I think for New York Times or some New York newspaper, right. Who wrote that line is so stupid that only a Swede could have written it. Huh. And they didn't realize that it was Joey Ramone singing.
Right. Oh.
Back in Japan, Backyard Babies is his favorite band. I got a friend, his name is Ben. He's gonna hell, but they won't let him in. Cause there is nothing that touches me the way they do. All the lies you've been hearing, baby, they're all true. Cause there is nothing that touches me the way they do. Nothing touches me. I got a friend, her name is Grace. When we broke up, it put a smile on my face. And there's a girl that I love, on Sally Shearer's eyes in heaven up above. Cause there is nothing that touches me the way they do. All the lies you've been hearing, baby, they're all true. Cause there is nothing that touches me.
Another classic that you wrote is "Somebody Put Something in My Drink."
Right. Mm-hmm.
What happened on that night? Because you sing about the night when someone spiked your gin and tonic with acid.
I moved to New York City with my friend, you know, when I was probably 18, 19. And, you know, we really had no money. So we would roll around the East Village, go into a nightclub. And when people got up to go to the bathroom or go dance, we just walk over the table and steal the drink. So we'd steal this drink and drink it, then say, oh, there goes somebody, and then drink their drink and walk around and drink the drinks. Well, one night, I start to feel really weird, you know, and I was like, oh, something's the matter with me, you know, when you, what should I do, you know? But I guess I got through it. I realized that I was spiked with LSD, but when you don't know you took something, it's a very frightening feeling at first because you don't know what's happening to your body, you know?
So what did you see?
Huh? I didn't see nothing. I don't see nothing.
You didn't hallucinate it or anything?
Nah, you hallucinate a little, but you're not seeing dinosaurs in your backyard.
Let's listen to Rock Lobster.
We were at a party. Here love fell in the day. Someone reached in and grabbed it. What a rock lobster. Rock lobster. Rock lobster.
You're friends with Fred Schneider from B-52s.
Yeah,
you've played on a few of his albums.
Well, I wrote a song for him for his solo album with Ron Ardito, who was in The Shirts in New York City, called Orbit. And that went on his solo record. But yeah, the B-52s used to play a lot with the Ramones. We did a lot of shows together. And that's like a classic, you know. We used to pogo. Remember, I don't know if they did the pogo here.
Pogo dance?
Yeah. All around New York City, we'd pogo to that song.
But pogo was, you know, like a predecessor to slam dancing.
Was it? I guess so.
You were just standing or jumping up and down, right?
And then I guess it turned into hitting other people as you were jumping around. And
in England, you would spit on each other, too.
Did
people spit on you when you were in the Ramones? Yeah.
Back then, it was horrific. Not only spit, but throw cigarette butts. I would see Joey come off a stage with spit and butts in his hair. You know, they called it like a, you know, that was like a you know, showing their affection. But it got to the point where you had to, like, stop the show and you know, give him the finger and say, no way, you know.
Because that was a British thing,
yeah,
right? You didn't really do that in
New York. Not much in America, no. But they would, like, drink milk, and they could spit maybe 40 feet. They could hit the drums from all the way there. And then if it hits the drum head and you have to hit it, it'll fly up. It was really, really awful, you know. I'm glad that's all gone now. You know?
That's disgusting.
They don't do it anymore.
Johnny is quite often, you know, described as this dictator in the band. You know, this right-wing, quite hard dude who, you know, didn't treat the others so well. But, you know, when you read about the Ramones, you sort of get the feeling that, in a way, that was necessary.
Right. Well,
that's what he was like the drill instructor who got them out of bed in the morning and just made...
Sure, I don't think he got them out of bed, but, you know, he ran a tight ship, and that may be why their longevity was so long rather than breaking up, you know? I mean, he ran a tight ship, and, you know, I remember the first show, they took us out for, like, Asian food, and I had a sake, and he said, oh, you're going to be able to play on that sake, you know, like, because I had a drink, because what they just went through Marky with. So, but yeah, I mean, that band was like, you know, there was no drinking before. Joey and I would have what was called a primer I invented, where right before we went on, we had one beer. We swigged it back, and that just loosened you up to go on the stage. I always remember that. We called it the primer.
The primer.
Yeah, you know, getting primed for the show. But I think John, you know, John ran the ship. He had a lot of other qualities that, you know, weren't the greatest, you know, but it's tough to sit here and talk about, you know, a dead person. I don't really like to go there. But yeah, he was kind of, you know, steering the boat, keeping everybody in check.
What about your identical style? Everyone was wearing leather jackets, tight jeans, basketball shoes, and bowl haircuts. it almost looked identical on stage.
Yeah, I don't know who really came up with that idea, but what I like about it is, you know, they what you wore on the street to go to the supermarket, you wore on stage. It wasn't like you had to change your outfit. You know, I feel sorry for these bands from the 80s who have to wear sparkle jackets and padded shoulders, you know, because that's what they look like in the 80s. Luckily, we can just walk around in jeans and a jacket. And the wardrobe case was the funniest thing on the Ramones. You open up this big case, and what was in there? Just four leather jackets in this whole case. That was it. That was our wardrobe. So we'd put on the show jacket, and then we put that back and put on a different leather to go home. That's all we did.
I remember the End of the Century album when that came out.
Okay.
A lot of people were, you know, complaining about the Ramones not wearing leather on the cover. You know, they only had t-shirts on, and Johnny said something like, "We're still wearing leather on the inside of the album."
Oh, okay.
Another nice looking album cover is Animal Boy, where you're holding a chimpanzee.
Right.
While I think it's Mickey Lee, Joey Ramone's brother, is in the background dressed as a gorilla.
I think that's Legs McNeil.
That's Legs McNeil.
Yeah, okay. Legs McNeil. Oh. Right, the writer, you know.
But how come you got to hold the live monkey? Didn't the others dare touch it?
They had that. That was a famous monkey. I forget his name now. Very famous. We paid a lot of money for that monkey. And so there we were standing there, and they give the monkey to Joey, and it would, you know, jump back to me. They give it to Joey, and the monkey would keep. We went through an hour of this where the monkey wouldn't stay with Joe or anybody else. It would just want to be held by me, you know. Maybe it knew I'm like an animal activist and all that kind of stuff. So finally, they just say, "Well, then let Richie hold the monkey," you know. And that's how that happened, which was kind of odd, but you know, it just wouldn't stay with anybody else. It kind of felt comfortable with me.
You've always had a good hand with animals.
Yeah, I love animals, and you know, the treatment of animals. I've spoken about it at City Hall and California and all kinds of things about shelters. So,
I read the list of animal rights organizations on your website.
Oh, okay.
There's a list there, and you, like, the most unusual of those organizations is perhaps Bat World Sanctuary,
which
is dedicated to taking care of bats worldwide. That's very goth.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, they're kind of like interesting creatures, those little guys, you know?
Are you a vegetarian?
No, not a vegetarian. I still eat animals, but I feel they're like raised to, you know, certain animals are raised to eat, you know? I mean, that's just the way it is. I'm not going to get all goofy about that, you know? I don't know. I think, you know, it's important to eat some meat. I don't know. You know, I'm not that crazy. I just don't, you know, believe you should, like, kick animals and starve them and keep them on a chain for 3 weeks, you know, and things like that. You know, I believe in free range. That's why I like coming here and going to, you know, Ireland and stuff like that. All the cows, everybody runs free in the fields. We don't have that space in America, so they just throw them in a, you know, they feed them corn, or they put 1,000 chickens in a room this size, 10 by 10. You know, it's pretty cruel, you know, but, you know, Europe has better regulations than we do have with the food.
Now, this is from West Side Story, America. I know that you created a classical piece called Suite for Drums and Orchestra?
Yes.
Based on different themes from a West Side Story.
Right. Mm-hmm.
What does that musical mean to you?
Well, West Side Story is, you know, it's teenage rebellion. That's what the whole movie's about, you know. Kids and punks and teenage rebellion. And, you know, I played it with an orchestra and did a 18-minute arrangement because I wanted to, you know, do some kind of different drumming rather than just 2-4 rock and roll. So, but it means a lot to me. And, you know, why I was able to get away with it is you don't really need a singer. Everybody knows the melodies to these songs. And the babies cry and the bullets fly. I like the island Manhattan. Smoke on your pipe and put that. Okay, by me in America, everything free.
it's hard to think of any band that had so little commercial success while they were still around right. and became so immense afterwards as the Ramones.
Right.
Do you have any idea why you know success kind of evaded the band?
Well, it was probably still before their time. Look what Green Day did. You know, they became huge. I think it was still a master plan, John, and you know the management, Johnny Ramone. That it was better to you know keep it underground, keep it that way. I mean, Joey, and you know, every time we make a record, Joey would go, "This is the one, Richie. This is the one, right?" And I said, "Yeah, you know," but they could never ever get a hit like that, you know. And so after a while, John was just like, "Well, you know, let's just, you know." Keep it like that. I think the Ramones were like one of the greatest club bands in the world. I mean, that's what we did. We played clubs. We sold them out all over the world, you know. Every night was a sellout.
Maybe the only big arena shows were in South America and like the mid-90s. They did a few.
Well, that's a whole nother story. You know, South America is, we're like the Beatles there. We're like a religion. I was just there on this tour, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. And people cry. They just go in tears. I can't even walk down the street without getting stopped. It's really incredible. In the airports,
and you're like, I'm not Jesus.
That's funny. But yeah, it's a religion there that's really intense. You know, nowhere else in the world is like South and Latin America, especially Argentina. And you know, it's really incredible.
When people see the presidential seal with the eagle, more of them think of the Ramones than the president. It's that famous.
Than the presidential seal. Well, I don't know about that.
You know, because you will see that logo anywhere you go.
Right.
You know, if you take a walk down the street in any city, any big city in the world, you will see that logo sooner or later. So the logo is, you know, Arturo Vega's work as a graphic designer.
Right.
Is perhaps, you know, the thing that has had the longest lifespan of...
And CBGBs, I think CBGBs, the Ramones are two of the most identifiable logos in the world. And then you get the Misfits with that skull. I see that around a lot, which is pretty popular. Or, the, you know, the Rolling Stones with the tongue, you know. But, yeah, that what he did, Arturo, with, you know, the seal and changed it up a little bit and put the bat in there. Huge, huge. Really talented man.
This is the last song I'd like to play you, and it's also the last song that you played last night.
Someone told me long ago, there's a calm before the storm. I know it's been coming for some time.
Do you know what they're talking about here?
I've been told that it's about the Vietnam War, but supposedly, you know, I think John Fogerty said that it's actually about the band breaking up. About Creedence Clearwater Revival being unhappy with each other.
Right. Yeah, I think that's more of the story. Back then, a lot of stuff was written about Vietnam, you know, a lot of songs, you know, so maybe they got it twisted. But again, like I said before, what does it mean to you, you know, what does it do to you, you know, and I don't believe there's just one answer of what a song's about in any song.
A very wise choice of you to play this song in Sweden, because you know Creedence Clearwater Revival was huge here.
Oh, okay,
they were massive, and even John Fogerty's solo career was a big thing. I remember when he came here in 1997, when his solo album Blue Moon Swamp came out, he sold out the biggest arena in town.
Wow,
like five nights in a row. So he's John Fogerty's very big here.
No, that's great. No, I'm not happy for that.
Have you ever seen the rain? I wanna know. Have you ever seen the rain?
What do you remember from, you know, hanging out with Dee Dee when he started to get into hip hop?
Well, I was at the forefront with that, with his hip hop. He would come every morning to my house in Manhattan at 8 a.m. and we'd sit there and write these songs. I would make the music and he would bring his lyric sheets. So, he just, after so many years, he just wanted to try his hand at something else. So I did that first, I produced that with Chris Williamson, that first record, Funky Man, and we had our friend Jimmy Rizzi, who's passed now, do the artwork. But that was, me, Dee Dee, who wrote that song, Funky Man. And he tried it and it was interesting and, we had a gas with it. But he was so full of knowledge, Dee Dee, and such a poet and a writer. I mean, he had notebooks of words and stuff. He had to keep writing to get this stuff off his chest. So why not try something else? So he had fun. He knew that he wasn't, really good at it or had any kind of, big thing about stardom about it, but it was fun to do. We had a lot of fun making those songs,
And he changed his name to Dee Dee King.
Dee Dee King, and he called me Broadway.
Broadway?
That was my
rap name?
Yeah, my rap name was Broadway. So,
but you never rapped.
I never rapped.
You made the beats.
Yeah, I made the beats. Mm-hmm. And we did a thing also for, we wanted to put the Fat Boys and Chubby Checker together. And we took our demo down to Chubby Checker in Atlantic City. He loved it. And then we brought it to the Fat Boys. It was Let's Twist Again and Do the Twist. It was a medley of the two songs. It was really killer. And the Fat Boys label, they stole it from me and Dee Dee. They ended up doing it themselves and left us out of the project.
Because that was a huge hit.
Yeah, and it brought back Chubby Checker's career. So I learned a lesson from that. You just can't shop something. People could steal anything from you, because they stole the whole idea. They can't steal a song that you wrote, but that was just an arrangement of two songs. And we did that, and my brother played saxophone on it, and we did that in my apartment. And that ended up getting done, and we got nothing for it. We just handed over an idea.
So how were you supposed to be involved? Was it supposed to be like Dee Dee Ramone and Dee Dee King and Broadway?
No,
we were
supposed to, get arranging credits and something like that. Okay. For the idea, We weren't going to be in it, but it was so cool, the Fat Boys, and, Dee Dee wrote the lyrics, they were really funny. So they just changed the lyrics and took the idea, and there it went. So you have to be careful with that. All you kids out there.
I hear you're writing a book about your time in the Ramones.
Oh, I'll mention it in mine. Yes, I signed a big deal with Backbeat Books, so we're in the process of writing it now. It should be out by next Christmas. So, it has to be delivered by April of next year and then hopefully by Christmas. So this is more, it's probably going to be 50% Ramones, but, a lot more about me growing up in New Jersey as a child and how I got into the Ramones in those years and then later years after that. So people are going to learn a lot about me that they don't know. And, it's very difficult to do a book. Writing a 3-minute song is hard enough for me, but this is really a big deal. And, I want it to be right. And you feel so exposed and so naked when you write a book, but it's got to be truthful and it's got to tell the story. So you have to accept that as you're doing it.
Have you read the other books? Because there are many books written about the Ramones.
Yeah, I read some. I think Mickey's is a real good book. There's a few out there that I skip through them because there's a lot of weird stuff about me and some of those books that aren't true or whatever, but we'll set the record straight here. And I never really wanted to write the book, but when the iron's hot, you gotta strike.
Didn't you feel like writing a book?
Because of first of all the work that's involved with it. But I figured everybody else is doing books, and I want to make sure that first it would come back. It would be on a coffee table book first, so it's going to be hardcover. I made sure it's that. It's going to be 100,000 words. It's going to be a big book. But yeah, I was never like the one, oh, I want to write a book, you know, because that's another thing I really don't know anything about, you know, writing books. So it's kind of, you know, it's kind of different to get involved with that. But now that it's been going and we've been writing for about 3 or 4 months, I'm starting to get excited about it, reading back and going, man, you were, what a brat you were, you know, growing up. So
why did you leave the band after 5 years?
Because business got in, you know, way of the music. The two collided, you know. It was time for me to, you know, after 4 years when they're using my image on T-shirts and things like that, you know, I've told this story a million times, but, you know, there comes a time where you know, I told Johnny, I just want, you know, I need a piece of the merchandising. Not an equal share. I wasn't there in 75, 76, 77, 78, 79, 80, 81, 82, 83. You understand? It was never going to be a dollar for dollar share. Just a little something, because it was more heartbreaking to, I can remember, you know, whenever we're touring in Europe and stuff like that, every day a tour would get on the bus with these 4-inch envelopes. Here you go, Dee Dee, Johnny, Joey. And I was in the back of the bus. I never got one. And the bus would stop at the bank. Three of them would get out, go in and change them the American dollars and come back in. I was like, you know, well, wait a minute. Now, after 4 years, you got my image on the shirt, you know, from Too Tough to Die. You have my name in the circle. You know, I just thought it would have been cool to get out of the bus too with maybe my 2-inch little stack and do something, you know. And as much as, you know, Johnny and Dee Dee and Joey would say, yeah, it's all good. They would never, when John said no, they'd all come down to no. You understand? Like you were talking about before, about him being the leader. But, you know, we'd be in after shows, hotels. Yeah, you know, they wanted me to have it, but John would always stop it. And then when I finally made the stink and quit, then it was all like people knocking on my door the next day. We'll give you this, we'll give you that, we'll get rid of John. We want you. And, you know, it's like all nonsense. And, you know, by that time it had soured. You know, I was just like, come on, now, after all this time that you want to do that. And, you know, here I was just still a kid. And I said, no, I'm not going to, you know, that's it, man. And that's what happened. Well, Frederick, this has been great, man, hanging out with you in your home. Thank you for inviting me here.
Well, I'm honored to have you here, Richie.
Yeah, it's really spectacular. So I guess now we got to head back to the hotel. We're going to the next city. I'm really not sure where that is because I don't know where I'm going until I land. But we have 3 more shows in Sweden, and then our 8-week tour is over. So went back to Los Angeles. But thank you for inviting me while I was in town.
Thank you for coming. Take care, man.
Okay. Peace.
Den här podcasten presenterades av Lejon Media i samarbete med Sonos. Producent var Daniel Bäckström och Richie Ramone var hemma hos Dragen. Days are not the same. Can't fish another day this way. Whoa, whoa, oh yeah, yeah. I fix us.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.